So Om Agnata Mirandasha Gananjana Shilakaya Chapsur and Meditam Yenatasmai Shigurve Namaha. So today is the celebration of one of the Dwadasha Mahajanas. That means the 12 great souls, great personalities, examples in devotional service. And that's Grandfather Bhishma. It's called Bhishmashtami. So we're going to tell the story about Grandfather Bhishma. Of course, Grandfather Bhishma wasn't known as Grandfather Bhishma when he was born, because he wasn't a grandfather, he was a kid. So, here's the story. Once upon a time, there was a great king, and this king had gone to heaven. Usually go to heaven if you do a lot of horse sacrifices, or according to the Vedic system, or you're very pious, or whatever. Or you're a devotee and you don't make much advancement. According to Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, if a devotee is like medium advanced, he first goes to heaven, and then he comes back and takes birth in a nice, religious, rich family, Jewish family. And he takes birth in a rich family, and then he gets a chance to take more devotional service. Someone who's very advanced, they take birth in a family of transcendentalists. And that such a birth, Krishna says in the Gita, is very rare. So Mahavish, he was in the heavenly planets because he had been very pious, and I guess he wasn't at least a pure devotee at that point. And he was attending some like dancing performance at Lord Brahma's assembly. And he was, I guess, watching the girls or whatever they do with dancing performances. So during that dancing performance, there was Ganga Devi there, the personification of the Ganges River, and there was some breeze. Of course, it was all arranged by Krishna, and it sort of blew her cloth up, so part of her body was revealed. And the other demigods, they just looked the other way. You know, that's obviously, you know, someone. Cloth is, stare. But Mahavish, he pretty much stared at her because he was entranced with her beauty. And Lord Brahma got very, very angry. And he said to Mahavish, therefore, you better go down to the earth planet because you don't belong here in my assembly. So he was cursed in that particular way. Of course, Ganga Devi, she was sort of pleased with the attention she was getting. She actually was in love with him, too. So it's interesting. I mean, if you appreciate someone's bodily beauty, sometimes they fall in love with you. If you say, your eyes are like diamonds, then the woman will say, oh, he loves me. Anyways, so somehow or other she appreciated that. At the same time, something else happened, or shortly before that, something else happened. There were these eight Vasus in the heavenly kingdom. And these eight Vasus had made a mistake because one of the Vasus stole Nandini. Nandini, of course, is the Kamadenu, desire cow of Vasishtha Muni. And actually, you see, this desire cow of Vasishtha Muni has been the cause of a lot of conflicts. Vishvamrita Muni also tried to steal the cow. And because if someone has a desire cow, a cow that can give nectarian milk and yogurt and paneer and everything, as well as anything you want, you know, soldiers and whatever, then someone would really like to have that cow. So that's what a desire cow is. So this one of the Vasus, his name was Jiao. He was the one who actually was instigating this stealing of the desire cow because his wife wanted to have some milk to give to her earthly friend. You know that old friend. She has a perfect memory. So to give to her earthly friend because it would make her young and beautiful again. It's like the fountain of youth in milk form. So the eight Vasus, they helped this one Vasu, the other seven helped this one Vasu steal the desired cow because his wife was nagging him to do so. And so Vasishtha Muni got really angry and cursed them to take birth on earth. Interesting how that's a curse, isn't it? You take birth on earth as a curse. Actually, it's a benediction during Kali Yuga, especially because Kirtanadeva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Parambajat. That is simply one chance Hare Krishna joins Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement and can go back to Godhead. Pretty interesting, isn't it? So, from the demigod's perspective, it's a curse. From the spiritual perspective, it's actually a benediction to take birth on earth. Because on earth, you got enough mixed misery and happiness to give you facility to be Krishna conscious. Not too much happiness and not too much misery. Of course, some people are really miserable. And some people, you know, extremely rich and happy. But generally, it's a mixed bag. So, therefore, they were cursed to take birth on earth. And basically, they weren't too happy about it because they were enjoying the heavenly planets. So, the same time that Ganga Devi decided to, you know, go down with Mahabish, and Mahabish was cursed, the Vasus approached Ganga Devi and said, if you're going to go down to earth, you know, to have this romantic fling, therefore you should be our mother. We're choosing you as our mother. Because we don't want just like any ordinary Mataji on the earth planet. We want someone who's like really qualified to be our mother. And plus, can you do this for us? And she said, what would you like to be done? And they said, we'd like to just have a very short life. And the one who is actually really responsible for this whole disaster, that's Jao, he should have the long life. He should take all of our lives, you know, the lifespans, and he should live the same time that all of our lifespans would be equal to. Therefore, upon being born, please kill us. Interesting request. So what happened is that she agreed to that. And Shantanu, and sorry, that's Mahabish came down to the earth planet and he became King Shantanu. And as King Shantanu, he was by the Ganges one day and he saw this beautiful lady, Ganga Devi, come out of the Ganges. And he fell in love with her. And he said to her, you know, he's so much enamored in love, because it's described when one is in love that, and I've said this before, it's just like taking a very heavy drug. I mean, even the scientists say it's, the brain scan is so, more or less like one has taken cocaine. So he was just like, wow, completely in love and in lust. And then he said to her, will you marry me? You know, first thing, pretty good, you know, without any astrological calculations or any sort of, you know, ISKCON compatibility test. Nowadays in ISKCON, we have these compatibility tests, you know, the ISKCON Grihastha Ministry, you consult them. Are you compatible? Is it time of getting to know you, getting to know all about you. Anyways, like that song goes. So, and then people spend like hours on the phone every day talking sweet nothings with each other. So, then he said, will you marry me? She said, oh, of course. But there's a pre-nuptial condition. And he said, whatever, you know. Because when one's in love, one will agree to any damn thing. And she said, you should never disagree with me, argue with me, talk back to me, or agitate me in any way. And he said, of course. Because he was thinking, you know, here's this beautiful girl. She's never going to do anything bad because she's saintly. She looked very saintly. I guess people think sometimes that Madonna looks saintly too, for some reason or other. So, therefore, he agreed, and they had this Gandharva marriage, and they exchanged, which means you exchange garlands, and therefore you're married. So they proceeded to have a relationship, and children were born 1 year after another, or, you know, 9 months after another, or whatever. And each and every time that she had a child, she threw the child into the Ganges River. You just killed a child. It's called infanticide. That's actually a hellish thing, infanticide. I mean, I was just reading about one particular religion where they don't allow the people to go to the doctors or take any medicine or anything like that. And what happens is there's a very large percentage of children being dying from disease. You know, very, very terrible. And you know, people just like abhorred by this particular thing. Because we use doctors and we're not against using modern technology to please Krishna or to save our health or life or something like that. So anyway, so she was killing them one after the other in Mahabish. Well, Shantanu at that particular point, he couldn't say anything because he understood that that would be the end of his marriage. And she was more dear to him than life itself. So after the seventh, you know, he was thinking, I hope this doesn't happen again. If this happens again, you know, I'm just going to say something. You know, because, you know, it's one thing to have one of your kids killed, but seven of them, that's a little too much. So then she had the eighth child, and she was getting ready to throw the eighth child into the river, and Shantanu said, stop! And she said, you're never supposed to disagree with me. He said, it's too much. You know, it's just too much. You've been killing all these kids. And she said, hasta luego, avida zain, you know, goodbye, ciao, as they say in Italy. And she went away with the kid. And when she went away with the kid, she trained him up. In many different ways. Not that she was his only teacher, it's described in the Mahabharata, that he was trained in politics by Brihaspati. Brihaspati, of course, is the priest of the demigods. He was trained in the Vedic literatures by Vasishtha Muni. So he had a lot of good training. It's not that, you know, he just like was self-manifested his intelligence or his devotion. And then he was trained in martial arts by his spiritual master, Parashuram, who he later fought with. We can tell that story. So he was later called Devavrat. Devavrat, of course, means a vow of the demigods, a vow of the godly persons. So what happened is that he came back later on to be with his father. His mother didn't stay with the father. His mother just went back to the heavenly planets. And his father was so happy to have him there that he installed him as the prince, what's called Yuvaraja, means the next king, someone who's in line to be the next king. And Shantanu was just like ecstatic to have such a son like that. Of course, there's many stories in the Mahabharata, how he was so proficient as a fighter. He was able to stem the flow of the Ganges with his arrows. In fact, Shantanu discovered him doing that. He actually fired all his arrows in the Ganges, and the Ganges stopped flowing, it flew back and flowed backwards. Pretty interesting, isn't it? And so Shantanu was in ecstasy until he came across another girl that he fell in love with. And this girl was Satyavati. So Satyavati was ostensibly the daughter of a fisherman, but she actually wasn't. She was actually the daughter of King Vasu, who somehow or other, some of his seminal fluid entered into a fish, and the fisherman, I'm in another story, I'm not going to tell the whole story, there's no time, and the fisherman caught the fish, opened up the fish, and found a little baby inside, a little girl baby, and because she was born from a fish, she had a fishy smell to her. In fact, you know, nobody could go near her. I mean, she smelled like the fish market in Calcutta or something. That's how bad it was. So he assigned her the duty, the father, the fisherman, the Matsya Raj means king of the fish, kingfish. So he assigned her the duty of rowing people across the river. Okay, so what happened previously before she met Shantanu was that she had her aroma fixed. And the way it was fixed is that she ran into Parashara Muni. She was ferrying Parashara Muni across the river. And Parashara Muni said, you know, basically we should have a child. And she said, well, this is not proper. And we're right in the middle of the river. And Parsha Aramuni created a fog. And in that fog was able to shield everything. And she remained a virgin girl after that particular point. And as a result, Shila Vyasadeva was born. And Parsha Aramuni also blessed her that from that point forward, she would actually have such a nice smell that she would not be known as Ganda Yojana. Ganda Yojana means someone's smell who goes for 8 miles. A Yojana is about 8 or 10 miles. And so, I mean, just, she didn't need perfume. It was just a natural perfume instead of the fish perfume she had before. So, interesting story. So then what happened is that Shantanu came along the river. He saw her and he fell in love with her and said, please marry me. And she said, you got to speak to my father first. And he went to see the father. And the father said, well, we got a problem here because I want my daughter's son to become the next king. And you already promised that to Devavrata. And Shantanu at that point went into a deep funk. It means depression, for those of you who don't know what it means. And he was completely, let's say, depressed. I mean, basically, you know, when someone's depressed, sometimes they sleep for days or don't open the door for days. And he didn't really want to tell his son, Devavrata, what was happening. He was just like locked in his room, crying, and his son kept asking, what's the problem, Dad? And Shantanu just said, nothing, hoo-hoo, like that. At that time, they didn't have Prozac. So he was just crying, and finally, Devavrata asked the prime minister or the assistant to Shantanu, you know, what's happening with Dad? And the prime minister or the king of the, or the head of the army revealed to Devavrata what was actually happening. And Devavrata said, I'm going to solve this whole thing. So he went to the fisherman and he started to talk to the fisherman. He said, my father would really like to marry your daughter. And the fisherman said the same thing, that actually he can't do it because you're going to be the next king, and I want her son to become the next king. And Devavrata said, therefore, I'm taking a vow that I will not become the next king. You know, I'm renouncing any claim to the kingdom. And the fisherman said, well, that's half there. Actually, there's going to be a problem, because if you have a son, your son will have the claim to the kingdom. And because, I mean, you're from a higher class family than a Fisher family. It's interesting, Fisher. Body by Fisher. Anyway, so what happened is that Devavrata took a vow then. He said, I'm therefore vowing that I will never get married, never have children. And at that point, all the demigods, they just like said, Bhishma. They gave him the name Bhishma. And this terrible vow, because for the demigods, that's like the worst vow you could possibly take. I mean, because the demigods, I mean, what's their happiness? Their happiness is based upon, you know, seeing dancing girls and, you know, and they have the apsaras there. It's just, you know, that's life. Because without that sort of conjugal relationship, the material world becomes very dry. It's supposed to, anyway. It is dry. So, he was called Bhishma, and then he took Satyavati back to his father. His father was just like overawed. He said, why did you do this? His father wasn't that happy with the whole thing because, you know, he understood it was not dharmic. So you actually see things happening here that are practically not dharmic, and that's all, it leads up to this whole Mahabharata war scenario. So then he got married, Shantanu got married to Satyavati, and being married to Satyavati, he had 2 children. Actually, another point is that Shantanu blessed Bhishma with the benediction that he would not die unless he wanted to die. So normally that would be like a benediction, but for Bhishma that became a curse, because you know he had to stay there and witness all these things. And Bhishma also took a vow at that point to whoever was that he would support, whoever was the king. He would do whatever the king or whatever the emperor wanted, the king or emperor of Hastinapur. So anyway, Satyavati and Shantanu had two kids, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. Chitrangada was killed by a Gandharva who had the same name. And that Gandharva later on became the friend of Arjuna and became known as Chitaratha because Arjuna burnt up his chariot. But that's another story in the Mahabharata. Hmm. Anyway, and then so Vichitravirya was the only remaining heir at that particular point. And so Bhishma really wanted to arrange a marriage for him because Vichitravirya couldn't arrange his own marriage. He wasn't that either enthusiastic or that strong like Grandfather Bhishma. So what he did, Grandfather Bhishma did, he kidnapped the king of Kashi's daughters, Amba, Ambalika, and Ambika. That means Amba, little Amba, and very little Amba. So it's interesting names. And he kidnapped them for his half-brother, Vichitravirya. And, of course, one of them, that is Amba, was not really happy with this because she was previously in love with this person named Shalva, Shalvaraj, the king of Shalva, whatever. And so Bhishma, when he found out about that, he sent her back. But Shalva, being a Kshatriya, and it's interesting about Kshatriyas, they had this pride. They would not accept charity or accept someone back like that. You know, if he hadn't won her, he wouldn't accept her, and also he's not going to accept her because some other man took her away. So then Shalva refused to accept Amba. Amba came back and said, you know, you have to marry me, Bhishma, because you actually won me. And Bhishma said, no, I'm not going to marry you because I've taken this vow of lifetime celibacy. And also, you know, someone who hates my guts, I'm certainly not going to marry. Because she really hated him because he ruined her whole plans for life. She had a whole romantic plan to be with Shalva for the rest of her life. So then Amba gets into a depression. She goes to her uncle. And the uncle says, you know, what can we do? And she says, do something. The uncle happens to be a friend of Parashuram. And so they all go to Parashuram. Amba and the uncle go to Parashuram. And Parashuram says, I'm going to force him to get married to you because he won you. And so Parashuram and Bhishma have this fight. It goes on for 23 days. The guru, of course, Parashuram is the guru of Grandfather Bhishma, the martial arts guru. So they're fighting for 23 days, the guru and disciple. And finally, you know, Bhishma pulls out his final weapon. The movie is not correct in this regard. And the demigods say, no, you can't hurt your spiritual master. And so Parashuram is defeated, and he doesn't have to marry Amba. But Amba thinks, you know, I'm going to get even with this guy. You know, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned. So Amba does penance to Lord Shiva to be born or reborn as the cause of death to Grandfather Bhishma, or Bhishma at that particular point. So Amba, interesting story about Amba. Hopefully I have enough time to tell this story. Amba is born as the daughter of Drupada, Shikhandi. But the problem is that Shiva says that actually it's a boy, and Drupada has so much faith in Lord Shiva that he thinks his daughter is a boy. And so he arranges a marriage with her to another girl. And in those days, that wasn't so popular. So he arranges a marriage. You know, and so what happens is this other girl who happens to be a princess, and she has a father who is a king, and they have this whole marriage, and then on the wedding night, they discover there's two girls that are married. And so this girl who married Shikhandi gets very upset, goes to her father. Father threatens Drupada, and Shikhandi feels so bad about the whole thing, she goes out to the forest to commit suicide. But meantime, she runs into a yaksha named Stunavara. He has some compassion upon her. he agrees to exchange his masculinity with her femininity. So Shikhandi becomes a man instead of a woman. Then, what happens is very interesting. So Stunavara, he's not leaving his home because, you know, it's obviously quite embarrassing if you change from man to woman like that. And so Kuvera comes to visit him. He doesn't come out of his home. It's explained to Kuvera what happens, and Kuvera curses him to remain a woman until Shikhandi dies. So Shikhandi actually was born as a woman, but is a man in that particular lifetime until he dies. So, that's the story of Shikhandi. So Shikhandi is meant to kill Grandfather Bhishma. So, So then, Bhishma keeps supporting the Kurus, because the Kurus are in charge of the kingdom. I'm not going to tell the whole story of the Mahabharata. But basically, he doesn't interfere when there's the attempted disrobing of Draupadi, there's the cheating and the gambling match, and so many religious activities are going on, and he doesn't interfere because he's supposed to support the king. The king, of course, at that time was Dhritarashtra, and Dhritarashtra's son is Duryodhana, and he doesn't go against them, even though he knows it's the wrong thing, because of his vow to support the kingdom and the king. So this is a very interesting ethical point, too. Like, when we're talking about whether something is right or wrong, is it based on the action itself, or is it based on the result of the action? The philosophy that right and wrong is determined by the result of the action is called consequentialism. I mean, it's a whole discussion in ethics and morality. So basically, the Mahabharata is teaching that an action should be judged upon by the consequences, not the action itself. Because sometimes Krishna, for example, in the Gita, many times, in the Mahabharata war, had to lie, but he lied for a higher purpose. Or he did something that was a little tricky, or, you know, against, let's say, ordinary morality, but there was for a higher purpose. An example, even Grandfather Bhishma uses at the end of the Mahabharata, when he's discussing ethics and morality with Yudhisthira, is he said that he's understood, first of all, he says he's understood the point that something is, whether something is ethical is determined by the effect of it. And he gives this example of, let's say, some dacoits running after a person or a family, and they take shelter in a sage's ashram, and the dacoits go to the sage, and they ask the sage, where is this particular individual? Where is this family? And the sage at that point, if he says, they're in my ashram, he's telling the truth, which is ostensibly ethical, but he's acting unethically because he's not protecting the people. So the end result is the people get killed. So in that particular case, the ethical thing would be to lie. Even though lying is unethical, but sometimes lying is ethical because of the effect of lying and protecting people in a particular case. So Bhishma finally realizes that at the end of his life, when he's lying on the bed of arrows and preaching to Yudhisthira Maharaj, finally he realizes that point. I mean, that's one of the main points in the Mahabharata. Because we have others like Kripacharya and Dronacharya, also who stuck to their ethical principles, but in doing so, they acted unethically. So very important ethical principle. So then, in the battle of Kurukshetra, getting into the end of the Mahabharata, Bhishma is appointed the commander-in-chief. He has a golden palm tree as his banner on his chariot. And he doesn't fight so seriously with Arjuna, because, you know, Arjuna is his grandson. And so Duryodhana taunts him, and Bhishma, being a Kshatriya, says, look, I have 5 golden arrows, and tomorrow I will kill the Pandavas with these arrows. I am putting all my potency into these arrows. So Duryodhana, just to keep things safe, puts them in a safe place inside his tent. But then Krishna and Arjuna appear, and Duryodhana still observes certain Kshatriya customs, and Arjuna goes to Duryodhana and says, can I ask for a boon? And Duryodhana says, yeah. Because he knows Arjuna is not going to ask for the whole kingdom, because Arjuna also has some ethical principles like that. So Arjuna asks Duryodhana for the arrows. Because Duryodhana also had previously promised to give him a boon when he saved Duryodhana from the Gandharvas previously. So this is a whole other story in the Mahabharata. So he gets the arrows, and Duryodhana tells Bhishma, make 5 more. Bhishma said, I can't, because I gave all my potency to these 5 arrows. Interesting story in the Mahabharata. But I will vow right now that I'm going to kill Arjuna the next day. Or, the only thing that's going to prevent that is if Krishna breaks his promise and interferes in this battle. But that's the only thing that's going to save Arjuna. I'm going to kill him, or Krishna's going to break his promise. This is a very important part of the Mahabharata, too. So what happened, we know the story, is that Grandfather Bhishma was firing his arrows at Arjuna, and Krishna, in order to save Arjuna, picked up the chariot wheel and rushed at Grandfather Bhishma. This is sort of a chivalrous relationship that Grandfather Bhishma had with Krishna. In fact, in the final days when he was getting ready to leave this world, lying on the bed of arrows, he was remembering this particular pastime with great love. And it's described that he even fired his arrows at Krishna. And Krishna experienced those arrows that hit his body. Of course, Krishna has a transcendental body. And we know, according to the Vedic literatures, Ashnaviram, he doesn't have any veins. But still, Krishna manifested some blood, just out of the pastime's sake. And it's described in the Bhagavatam that he experienced the biting of Bhishma's arrows like the biting of a lover or something like that. You know, love bites, basically. And so this was like a chivalrous exchange. It was a very rasika, full of bhav, you know, emotion exchange between Grandfather Bhishma and Krishna. Actually, 2 days in the battle of Kurukshetra, 2 times in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna broke his promise. One time, we find that Arjuna was not fighting seriously enough with Bhishma, and then Krishna said, if you're not going to kill him, I'm going to kill him. And so Krishna rushed at that point. And then the second time, which I just told, when Krishna was protecting Arjuna. So the point is that Krishna shows that breaking your promise for a higher principle is okay, but not breaking your promise for a lower principle, obviously. But for particular to protect your friend, I mean, if your friend is going to be killed and you promised not to interfere, you better break your promise. So Krishna is instructing us and instructing Bhishma in higher ethics that Bhishma didn't understand at that particular point. Finally, Bhishma was defeated by Arjuna firing arrows, being shielded by Shikhandi, because Bhishma had also known through his spies that Amba had taken birth as Shikhandi, and that Shikhandi was born as a girl, later on became transformed to a man. And so Bhishma would not fire it at any woman or someone who was previously a woman. This, of course, was also another ethical principle the Kshatriyas followed. Like nowadays, of course, you see these fights. Sometimes the women are soldiers. Sometimes the women are kidnapped or attacked or what to speak of, you know, raped and other things that happen in the battles. But in those days, the fight took place on a battlefield, and the people in the city were not actually involved in the fight. I mean, of course, the women suffered because their husbands died. I mean, that's another, husbands or fathers or brothers died. But the women weren't directly involved in the fight, in the battle of Kurukshetra. Women weren't allowed on the battlefield. But Shikhandi was a man at that particular point. So anyway, so Krishna filled Grandfather Bhishma with arrows. And so many arrows, it's described in the Mahabharata, there was not even a finger's width between the arrows. Could you imagine that? I mean, obviously he didn't shoot his eyes, but through the rest of the body, and then Bhishma just went back on his back, and he couldn't move anymore. He didn't die because he understood he wanted to die at a particular time, and also when Krishna was in front of him. And the first thing that happened when Bhishma went on his back, he was feeling like some strain in his neck. Obviously, you're lying on your back, and probably no arrows in the head, so he was feeling some strain in his neck, and he said, get me a pillow. And Duryodhana went to get a pillow, and he said, I don't want that type of pillow. And he looked at Arjuna, and Arjuna fired his arrows, and his arrows formed with their feathers, like a pillow. He fired his arrows at the ground, and the arrows just crisscrossed in such a way that there was a pillow for Grandfather Bhishma. And then Grandfather Bhishma was saying, I'm thirsty. And Duryodhana went to get him some water, and Grandfather Bhishma said, no, I don't want water from you. And Arjuna drew his bow and fired an arrow into the ground, and the Ganges, the celestial Ganges, came out of the ground and satiated Grandfather Bhishma. So then on the bed of arrows, of course, a lot of the Mahabharata is the Bhishma Parv, Ashanti Parv, actually, the end of the Mahabharata, where Grandfather Bhishma is instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj on how to be a king, you know, what's called Niti Shastra, like how to relate to your citizens, how to take care of the kingdom, and also what is ethics and morality. And finally, Grandfather Bhishma leaves this world looking at Krishna and at the appropriate time and goes back to home, back to Godhead. And so that's the story of Grandfather Bhishma. So any questions or comments? Yeah.
Whatever happened to Ambika and Ambalika?
They got married to Vichitravirya. And of course, you know, I'm not going to, that's a whole story where they had, that Vichitravirya was so much enamored with them that he died. You know, he was just like, I guess, like they see in Rome, the stories where someone's eating grapes, you know, and just like neglecting himself, getting to sense gratification. He died before he had any issue. And therefore, there was a problem because Grandfather Bhishma was called, you know, that time a brother could have a relationship with his brother's wife to have a child if necessary. And Sajjavati said, you know, you should do this. And he said, no way, Jose. And then she said, well, there's another alternative. I have another son previous to my marriage, and that's Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva was called. And Vyasadeva had a relationship with the two ladies. One of the ladies, of course, was so frightened upon seeing Vyasadeva because he'd been performing austerities, having a chance to change his appearance, that she closed her eyes, and therefore Dhritarashtra was born. And then the other relationship was Pandu. And then she asked him to have a relationship with Ambika again. And Ambika didn't want to have that, so she put a maidservant forward, and as a result, Vidura was born. Anyway, that's the whole Mahabharata. I mean, I didn't have time to tell the whole Mahabharata story, but it's interesting.
It's endless.
Yeah, it's an endless story, but...